It's time for The Drive's Top 5 at 5.
Quitting time on your Tuesday, 5 o'clock here on Fan Run Radio. The Top 5 at 5 this afternoon brought to you by National Law Rex. Here once again is Marcus Young.
Thank you, Russell. Number one, we have the fortunate news about Atlanta Braves' Kenley Jansen, who's been put on the IL with an irregular heartbeat. One of those kind of injuries that are very rare and far few between when it comes to athletes, so it's unfortunate to see that. Hopefully they'll figure it out and he can get back there on the pitch.
So they haven't said what it is yet?
Well, they're saying that it's listed with an irregular heartbeat. That's what it is, and it's a 15-day injury list that he's on. So he's had a couple surgeries that has involved his heart over the years. So, you know, he's 34 years old.
He's had previous heart cardiac surgery?
Yeah, so he had a corrective heart surgery, which was his second procedure in November 2018. And then he initially underwent a cardiac, if I can say this correctly, ablation in 2012 with abnormal tissue in the left atrium of his heart. So,
Dr. Bear understands all of that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've never heard of what he's talking about.
But, yeah, so hopefully after the process.
You never went to med school or something to become a sports radio host? I mean.
Do what? No, I'm just saying I've never heard of this problem.
Number two, the Washington Commanders, Terry McLaurin, have agreed to a 3-year extension with a $28 million signing bonus. It's going to be worth up to $71 million. It's going to keep him within the amongst the NFL's 5 highest paid wide receivers, keeping him in a Commander's uniform.
He's a Commander.
I'll tell you, he's not commanding.
He was good on my fantasy team.
He's
last
a good,
year.
Yeah, no, I had him too. Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys like you've never heard of.
He was
like
a third round pick.
He ends up on your team, and you're like, oh, this guy's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I believe he was a third round pick for Washington. So he was. He came out of Ohio State, which is making it more.
They have a quarterback this year? Like, anybody can throw him. That was the problem.
They drafted the kid out of North Carolina. What's his name?
Sam Howell.
Yes.
Sam Howell?
They drafted him. They still have the one guy that has been a journeyman who almost beat Tom Brady in the playoffs.
Yeah, I like that guy, Haneke.
And then they've also got. Oh, they recently picked somebody else up, too. This is going to bother me. I'll have to do a little research here in a second to find it. But
do your research.
I will.
We do our research. Have you done your research?
They do have another quarterback in their group, but I can't think of who it is at the moment. And Wentz. They have Carson Wentz.
Oh.
They traded for Carson Wentz. So or signed.
How could we forget about Carson Wentz?
I know, he's always
the unstoppable
on my
force.
Mind. Always on my mind.
I'll tell you who can't be found is their owner. He's jet setting around the world on his big billionaire yacht right now.
Number three.
What if he just has to go into hiding like Edward Snowden or something? He can't return.
Yeah, I mean, he could go into hiding if he wants to.
Pretty much all my life, if Congress tells you need to show up and answer some questions, you can't really get out of that.
No, sorry, Senator. I got a thing. Can't make it.
You go back and look it up. I mean, there have been all kinds of people they've called the like mob people. You can't just ignore them. Snyder.
Number three, the ACC has decided they're going to be dropping their divisions in 2023 for their football season. The 14 teams will instead compete in a 3-5-5 format, meaning they'll have 3 permanent rivals and 5 opponents that will alternate year to year.
Did any of you guys understand? You guys weren't even listening, right?
I was.
Rusty's proposal.
I was not fully.
I can't.
I was with you.
Just keep up with it.
If somebody's going to tell it to me, I have to have it written down in front of me for my meager brain to process something like that.
Yeah, I was. I won't lie. I was also slightly confused by the way he was explaining it.
I mean, this is what the SEC is going to do. It sounds like.
Yeah, more than likely.
The 3 permanent opponents, but we're going to go 6 games, 6 rotators instead of 5.
We have more teams. They only have 14 in the ACC, and we're going to have 16, correct?
Well, how does Notre Dame play into that?
I don't think Notre Dame was a part of them for the whole COVID year. But then I don't think they're a part of the ACC anymore.
But they have some weird agreement where they play five ACC teams every year.
Oh, right. Maybe they just play a part of like a random game? These are questions.
These are things you should have thought of before you jumped on here with your little top five at five, acting like I know all the information.
I don't pay attention to Notre Dame. After what they did, I tried to ignore them. Number three, the Utah Jazz are finalizing a deal to make Boston Celtics assistant Will Hardy their new head coach. To be honest with you, even as a Celtics fan, he is not on my radar. He's 34 years old and will be the youngest active head coach in the NBA. He was one of the four finalists who met with ownership in Salt Lake City. And, somehow he convinced Danny Ainge that he's the guy.
He's the guy. Well, he probably knew him from Boston.
Well, I don't know. With him being an assistant coach, I don't know if he was a part of the new coach's coaching staff this year. Because, you know, we had a rookie head coach. But it's possible that they...
I'm sure Ainge knows everybody. In that, like,
if that guy walked in here right now, I couldn't pick him out.
I saw a photo of him. I wouldn't either. I would have thought, oh, look, we got a new assistant or like intern. Like, he does not stand out in the crowd. Yeah, he only spent one season with the Celtics, which was this year. So,
they're hiring these guys, like the Grizzlies coach. I don't think he played college basketball. Like, I don't know that he was a very good high school player. He's just a really. He, like, interned with the Spurs and just sort of hung around with his due diligence, his big analytics guy, and that's what they want right now as a CEO. What happened to that dude from the Warriors who took the Hornets job
and then
pulled a Bobby Crimmins? He's like, I think I want to go back.
Yeah, he backed out.
He's like, wait a minute. There's no Steph Curry, Klay Thompson here. This is going to be really hard. I think I'll just go wait and see if Steve Kerr ever hangs it up, and I just replace him someday.
Is he probably the greatest NBA coach? Is he taking over?
Who?
Popovich?
Kerr?
Yeah.
Taking over for Popovich?
I mean, think about what he's done in the small amount of time he's being
Bear
head coach.
Is just indignant.
Look,
right
I
now.
Love Pop. I do, but like.
Who's your top NBA coach? Not of all time, of right now.
Oh, right now?
That's where the.
Okay. Sorry.
He was about to start telling us about the
coach,
glory
we got
of
to
Ray
go
Harbaugh
on the porch during
Pat Riley.
the porch during the top five of five.
Well, we haven't been up there in a minute.
That's true. I wouldn't mind. Number four.
Phil Jackson.
I guess. Is he part of right now, though?
No.
Number four. Vitello tabbed as the ABCA Southeast Regional Coach of the Year.
College baseball needs – sorry to cut you off, Marcus. No, but college baseball needs to get its award thing together, right? there are too many. The ABCA, the Southeast Division of College Coaches, like all these different awards. And I don't even know what poll I'm supposed to be looking at during the season. Like, we need to identify what the how we judge this sport, what the parameters are, so that we're all speaking the same language. I don't know if this is important. Is this important, what you're telling me?
Well, I mean, Tennessee posted it on their website. I thought, you know, we'd get a little positivity going today.
This is like the preseason award watch list.
Yeah.
You're going to start seeing, probably next week in July, that every year now, every position in football has a preseason award watch list. Like the Lou Groza cornerback award, and everybody who plays the position in the country is on that list, including walk-ons. And every school is like, oh, look, these three guys were named to the Davey O'Brien award watch list, the Maxwell award watch list, the Biletnikoff, the like every position. I'm not kidding. Like every position has an award watch list and everybody's on it. And you're like, I know Jabari Small is not going to be the number one running back in college football this year.
Is he on the Duke Walker?
No offense. I'm sure he will be. You know he will be, right?
Yeah.
Tillman will be on the Biletnikoff list. Hooker will be.
Would be deserved.
Hooker will be on the quarterback list. The
Davey O'Brien.
Yeah, and the Maxwell, like the greatest player list.
Be on the fringes of the Heisman. conversation.
Anybody who started more than two games, like Trayvon Flowers, will probably be on some award watch list. And no offense, like these are good players, and I hope that they do well, and they're key to our success, and I hope they win those awards. But they won't. Because 120 players on this award watch list.
So anyway,
we'll see those stories every day for the next month.
He was named the Southeast Regional Coach of the Year by the American Baseball Coaching Association.
I can see Tillman being
very
a finalist.
Prestigious. Yeah.
So, finally, at number five, a mostly complete baby mammoth was found in North America. It was a female calf that lived almost 30,000 years
ago. Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, it's still alive. I was like, wow.
No, but the images of it are pretty...
Doing Jurassic Park somewhere?
Or, I mean, was it mummified or
it
frozen?
It was mummified, yes. It was found in the Yukon. It was frozen in permafrost that kept its skin mostly intact.
Wow.
They found it in the Yukon in Canada. They named it. I'm not even going to try to pronounce
that. Pictures?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple photos.
Gross looking?
Slightly. The trunk looks kind of weird because obviously there's no tusks to it. It definitely looks like it has been. I should clarify. It was found by miners.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
While they were working in the Klondike gold fields.
It is weird looking.
But yeah, it's got most of
its... Think you stick that leg in a fryer and eat it? Would you eat some fried mammoth?
Not after that many years of, you know, there's probably an expiration date.
10,000-year-old fried mammoth. Might be good.
How much money would I be getting for that?
Tastes like chicken.
Also had some hair still clinging to the body, too, so, you know.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thought that was really interesting that, you know, after all this time just digging through the gold fields, they just found a random mammoth in there.
Scientists believe woolly mammoths who wandered North America alongside wild horses, cave lions, and giant bison went extinct as late as 4,000 years ago. An adult nunchoga, is that the scientific name for it?
Well, so that's what I was going to, I didn't know if I wanted to try to pronounce that.
Nunchoga.
But they named that meaning baby big animal is what it translates to.
Could have grown as tall as 13 feet. At the shoulder. It's a big mammoth.
Oh, yeah.
Aptly named animal.
Especially like a hairy elephant, right?
Yeah.
Like those things. In-
but I think it's a lot larger, too. But the other thing that's kind of interesting that made me think of this when I read this article was that South Korea apparently has been trying to revive the woolly mammoth, like bringing it back into existence.
Like straight up Jurassic Park style.
Yeah, that's what has been...
Well, if you've got... Wow. I mean, that's not nearly as hard as... Bringing back the dinosaurs.
No. I mean, from what I've read, they've been doing this.
Can you do this? Is this a thing? Bringing back an extinct animal?
Yeah. I mean, the science is kind of, I mean, they'd cloned sheep before.
Right. And so
they brought back an extinct animal? Yes or no?
I don't know.
Yet? No.
You think they
potentially.
Will?
Potentially. I mean, a lot of it's going to be similar.
The Google AI thing, just hired a lawyer last week out there in California, man. We aren't far off a lot of stuff, Russell.
The woolly mammoth, you know, obviously has very close relations to the elephant. So I imagine some of the DNA from the elephant can be used to you know.
I was going to say, I mean, do we want to live in a Jurassic Park world?
According to this, the woolly mammoth was roughly the same size as a modern African elephant. So I think I accidentally lied. But
African elephants are huge.
I thought mammoths were actually much bigger, but apparently not. I would think that a woolly mammoth would be less dangerous than a T-Rex or a Velociraptor.
Tusks?
Yeah, very long tusks from the images.
All I know is like those history books we used to read in school growing up. Back when they had textbooks, that was always the first page of like world history. Is you'd see a woolly mammoth and a bunch of dudes in loincloths throwing spears at it, like trying to bring it down. Well, see, they ate mammoth back in the day. If it's good enough for Neanderthals,
right,
it should be good enough.
They
for
They ate it fresh, though. Mine's a few thousand years
fresh
old.
Fresh mammoth.
Also, their tusks look a lot more curled. compared to a regular elephant, like it's kind of.
What's the point of that?
I don't know, but the images that they're showing, it looks like you could use their tusks like to lift things. Maybe that's why we're going to clone them, so that we can use them for labor.
Yeah, I don't see us spending that kind of money to clone an animal. uses a strictly a pack animal.
I'm just wondering. They'll be able to...
they will be in the zoos.
They'll be able to clone me, bring me back. God. By the time I'm dead.
The world can breathe easy.
Bring anybody back.
Yeah. It's not the same.
Bring anybody back. You got some questions you want answered?
I don't think they have the same...
Have the same
yeah,
memory.
They're not going to have the same subconscious.
We can bring OJ back and try him for murder.
He's not dead.
Well, he will be. By the time we figure this stuff out, he'll be.
He's out now, right?
Yeah, juice is loose.
Yeah, and he
Love that. You love that judge that sentenced him.
He posts on Twitter all the time, like things that
so creepy. And people retweet it and everything. I'm like, what are we doing?
Like he will like he'll post ones that have like emojis with knives and things like that. Like he is like taunting the world that he survived it, and he's like on a golf course every time.
You ever heard Chappelle talk about meeting him?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where does he rank on our list of worst currently alive people? He's like right, maybe a notch or two above Putin.
Oh, as far as being worse than Putin? Oh, he's an amateur compared to Putin.
We got any really bad terrorists that we haven't killed in prison somewhere?
I mean, who knows?
Who's number one on the FBI most wanted list right now?
I have no clue.
Marcus has sprung into action.
I want to know now.
865.
I know who would be in the top five.
Who?
If they released him, is that guy that they're wanting, the Russians are wanting.
This again, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to release him. 546-8200, your number to get on the drive this afternoon.
All right, hold on, buddy.
546-8200, your number to engage in the festivities today. Let's take a quick break. We'll come right back with phone calls. You're listening to Fan Run Radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, or streaming online at fanrunradio.com and the free Fan Run app. A variety of ways for you to continue experiencing the program. Your phone call is coming up next. Back with more after this. All right, Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Jake Miller is here preparing two more hours for you, 6 to 8. Check out Overtime coming up next on many of these fine Fan Run affiliates. Let's get Jeff in here as we go back to the busy, busy phone lines. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What's up?
Oh, not a whole lot. Hey, y'all were talking a few minutes ago about, you know, cloning stuff, bringing stuff back from, you know, when they went extinct or whatever.
Yeah.
So when I, in the 90s, kind of showing my age a little bit, I'm actually at the precipice of my adult career, I think 39, I'll be 40 in a week or so. But in the 90s, there was my aunt worked for this like laboratory that could actually, you know, they were researching, it was top secret. They were researching, you know, how to bring extinct animals back, in particular dinosaurs. And she revolutionized, actually her grandpa revolutionized this technique to actually extract DNA from mosquitoes that had been hardened in molasses. And
you mean amber?
They, I mean, well, that's funny. You meant, it's funny you know about
you're
that.
You're describing the plot to Jurassic Park right now. Spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, I know that's kind of stolen the thunder. Okay.
You're saying the book, the movie was based on the real actual work your family member was a part of.
Yeah, the movie is what it is, but I'm actually talking real stuff, Russ.
Okay.
But
I don't know. You guys sometimes callers like to pull my leg, and I feel like I'm gullible just going along with this and. You guys are just having fun with me. I can't tell with some of you guys, Jeff.
Well, they actually did table it because, you know, as you would imagine, there was a lot of lucrative offers to try to steal the idea and such. And
Newman came with a can of shaving cream and tried to steal your technology. Dotson, we got Dotson here.
See, no one cares.
Did you review the files or so? How do you know that? No, that is a classic part from that. He's like, don't say my name. What? And then he says, so no one gets that reference. Thank you, Russ. Mm. Hey, sorry, I digress on what I really wanted to talk about. So I saw Cornbread the other day on some show, actually Cornbread. Giving Tennessee props. Pruitt?
Yeah.
He's
doing the media tour right now. Jeremy Pruitt is doing a Image Rehab media tour. He did an interview with last week with the guy we had on. I'm blanking on the name. Jake Crane.
Been on three or something.
Jake Crane. And then he did one today with Mike Griffith.
Yeah, so he's definitely trying to rejuvenate something. But he was saying Tennessee's kind of like a dark horse in the East, which, hey, give the guys kudos. I mean, it's hard for, you know, so he could have easily just blasted all over Tennessee, but, I mean, at least he's...
Oh, he blasted all over Tennessee. He blasted our program into the ground. I mean, we're still, Jeff, dealing with an NCAA investigation from his blasting.
Well, but you think about the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, us not paying him. He could have easily been like, Tennessee's going to suck and just whatever. So to have objective, whichever one that is, take on Tennessee was surprising me. But it did, which leads me to the crux of my call, and I'll get off here. It did make me wonder who out of the four horribly failed coaches, I don't know how you can get four in a row, between Kiffin, Butch, Cornbread, and, of course, Dooley, in a battle royale to the death.
Oh, Lord.
Who comes out alive? Great show.
Bare hand, no weapons.
Who is this now?
The last four football coaches. I don't know, man. I don't know. I want to rule out Butch first because he's small and weak and not altogether too bright. I want to rule out Pruitt, but he did play. He was a former D1 college athlete.
I mean, he got a scholarship to MTSU and then walked on at Bama. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, so he's
– Yeah, but he's also
– put on a lot of weight.
Yeah, he's middle-aged.
And, again, not terribly intelligent.
But he does have that Alabama gump strength probably.
Dooley played D1 football, and he probably takes care. I mean, he looks like a guy.
Dooley had a hip replacement. He's getting his ass whipped.
Okay.
I'm going with
Kiffin?
Probably.
That's a sad fight. I mean, that's not.
Yeah.
Kind of wish this question came up last week so you couldn't say that answer. You think he got you with the molasses? He was going to escape with the molasses.
I don't know. Was he trying to get over on us?
What?
You know, the book Jurassic Park came out in 1990 by Michael Crichton. Like that's
Crichton.
Came out in 1990.
Be wary of bears. He wants to get the names right when it comes to literature.
Yeah, it was
Michael Crichton was the hot guy in the 90s, like everything. He
created ER.
He'd write a book, and it's a movie, like 2 years later.
Yeah, and then he also created the original film or show for Westworld, which then created the new TV show for HBO.
You mean the movie with Yul Brynner?
Was it a movie? I couldn't remember if it was a movie or a show, but yeah. He
freaked me out when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Pulled off Yul Brynner's face and had like robot parts in there.
I think he threw in the molasses one to throw you off, because if he had said amber, then he obviously you would have known.
Yeah.
So. Are we really debating whether or not
he was being honest?
He was a total clown. From a known clown. Love it when he calls.
It makes so much sense.
Give us this moment just to hope and dream that maybe it was real and we could have dinosaurs.
DJ Loop says, transhumanism conversion on the drive. We are in the Sports Talk Radio summer wilderness, and I'm here for it.
That is one thing about the summertime, that the conversations can get way off topic and very interesting quickly. I mean, did any of us expect to be in Hotel Garantano at the start of this
No,
I did. I was just hadn't figured out how I was going to get there. And Russell offered up the perfect opportunity.
Oh, man.
I've been wanting to play that music for a while.
Do you have like a summer like bucket list of things you're going to try to
do to subvert Russell's authority on his own show?
Yeah. Is that what the rest of July is going
to
look like?
No. We got 3 hours to fill. I mean, there. You know, you're going to have days like today where there's not –
there's not a whole lot of sports news.
Well, there's things going on, but there's not that one topic that just like usually between the months of September and May, you're going to have – there's a football story or a basketball story or a game or a tournament or something that you're talking about. And like we finally got to that time where there really isn't that thing. I do have – a couple of things that we need. First of all, there is the Avalanche beat writer.
Yeah.
You see this?
I did see that.
Who is getting.
He looks out of his mind.
He's a beat writer for the Colorado Avalanche who is getting roasted right now for partying with the team. He's photographed. He's hoisting the Stanley Cup. And people are saying, oh, you have soiled the sanctity of journalism. And I don't know, man. I kind of like this guy.
If the Titans won the Super Bowl, you're like, hey, Russ, you want to come party with us and see the Lombardi Trophy? What are you going to say, Russ?
Let's see. This guy is Mike Chambers. He writes for – he says, a proud father of West Point cadet, covers hockey for the Denver Post. I mean, that's kind of a respectable – I don't know. It sounds respectable. Is that the main Denver newspaper? 467,000 subscribers. Yeah. Looks legit. And anyway, he's covering the team, and he tweets, probably the most memorable experience of my career, hashtag Stanley Cup. And he's holding the cup, smoking a cigar, and just looks like he's having the time of his life. Is that unprofessional? Is that what we want from our media? Marcus, you're a hockey fan. Does that change your opinion of Mike Chambers and the quality coverage that you expect from him?
So the second photo is the one that gets me. The one where he's standing next to the captain holding the cup together.
Oh, that's the captain? I thought that was just another media guy.
No, that's the captain of the Avalanche, Gabriel Landeskog. It just... He looks out of his mind a little bit in that second photo, if you want me to be honest with you. I don't know if it changes. Does it really affect his credentials? I don't know. To me, it's different with Russell, because, like, to me, this guy is in the building constantly talking to these guys, interviewing
Here's what I would say. If you're working for the Denver Post, you're a beat writer, you cover the team, probably not a great look. If you're a guy like us, your radio, this is why I couldn't do it, man. Like I used to go to the games and sit up in the press box with the writers, like the New Sentinel guys and all that stuff. And God, it's a different job for those guys, right? But like everybody, you know, there's no cheering in the press box. You don't choose sides, and you're there to do a job and everything. And I could never do that. I was always like, oh my God, I want my team to win. And I just assume that everybody else is a little bit that. Whenever I hear a like sports journalist say, I don't really pull for a team. I don't really care who wins.
Yeah.
I just assume they're lying.
Well, there was a...
Because if you're not, like, what are you doing? Like, why would sports be fun if you don't care who wins? That's the entire point to me of sports is I want this guy or this team to win. Yeah. I have a favorite.
There was an incident last year where the Vegas Golden Knights Twitter account, after we scored against them, tweeted out, nice to hear the journalists cheering for that goal, which was a mass. Every journalist that I follow that writes about the Predators were all, like, slamming Vegas for sending that. I was like, we were not cheering. Like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Do you remember the LSU game when they came in here with Jamarcus Russell and scored at the end?
Yes.
2006.
Yeah.
when that happened, you would have thought the all the LSU guys in the Neyland press park, they just went crazy, man. They're cheering and hollering and hooting. And like some of the UT like sports information people are like, oh my God, this is so unprofessional. I can't. I thought it was I was disappointed and pissed off and everything, but I was like, I'd probably be doing the same thing.
I mean, remember what happened? Wasn't it last year with Eli Gold, and they had that video of him when Texas A&M was beating him?
Yeah. He just stopped doing the game. Yeah. Like he shut down.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it.
He didn't announce that the field goal was good.
He just stopped. He couldn't. But that's different. That's almost like.
That was weird. That was weird and super unprofessional, dude. I mean, that's what you're getting paid to do.
Well, it's like, what does he think that if he doesn't announce what's happening, it's not actually happening? Does he really think? Maybe he does. Maybe he thinks I'm that powerful. I'm the great and powerful Eli Gold. And if I don't say the field goal was good, it wasn't good. And Alabama wins.
Roll down tide.
Not a big fan of his.
Oh, I can't do the press box anymore for Tennessee games. Somebody invited me for some of the baseball games this year. I was like, I can't do it, man. Like, I make a fool of myself. All those guys would be looking at, who's this idiot? Why'd they let Russell in here? He's cheering.
Get Griff to come over and talk to you.
Oh, man. Yeah, this dude's getting roasted. Jeff Perlman, dear journalist, what not to do ever. Jason Riley, who's verified, WDRB, says, I know it sounds great, but these people are not your friends. Ron Clements, this is the moment where Mike was never taken seriously as a journalist ever again. Wow. Watched a movie last night. Rick Butler recommended to me. Anybody can watch this on YouTube. It's on there free.
Right.
Shattered Glass. With Hayden Christensen from Star Wars. He played young Darth Vader. Remember those
Anakin.
First three awful movies? Yeah. The movies where Natalie Portman was the only redeeming quality.
That's like your number one crush.
He plays this dude. It was a real story. Stephen Glass. He wrote for the
New Republic.
New Republic. Yeah, it was like this hoity-toity, like, inside baseball political magazine back in the 90s that was a big deal, back when magazines were a big deal. It's probably still a website somewhere or something. But he was just, like, making up stories. Like, not making up quotes or embellishing things to make a better story. He was just making up stories. Didn't even happen. And he got, like, 40 of them published before they finally busted him on one. He was writing to this tech story about these hackers.
Right.
That hacked into some Silicon Valley's website and all this stuff.
Just never happened?
Yeah, and one of the other, there was another company, it was like Forbes Online. They were like, why didn't we get this story? This should be our beat. We should get this. And so they started looking into it, and they couldn't verify any of the information. And it turns out this dude had just been making stuff up for this super prestigious publication. Just completely sullied their good name.
See, nowadays he'd be working at the Onion.
Or here.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to go there, but, yeah.
No, we don't. I don't make stuff up.
We started some rumors.
Absolutely have not. I mean, you, like, this is what happens, is you throw stuff out there that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was the one throwing stuff out there during.
What rumor did I start?
The whole Gruden thing.
I did not start the groomers.
No, but you served as one of its main headquarters for trafficking of all things, all nugs Gruden.
It was entertaining, man. I mean, it was sports radio. This is not serious journalism. This is the playground of journalism. It's just games. Yes,
Marcus. We have some breaking news.
Wow, do we need to go to the breaking news desk?
Well, potentially. As we speak, Serena Williams has just fallen to Harmony Tan in the third.
It's a final now! Is this Serena's last appearance at Wimbledon?
That's why I wondered if we wanted breaking news, because this could be.
Well, it's absolutely breaking news. We may be seeing her walk off of are they at Center Court. Yeah, because it's under that roof.
Yeah,
thing.
It was the third set tie break.
Oh, man. It's tough.
So,
Do you like the way they've done, they do that now with center court?
What?
That roof thing so they can play in the rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Retractable roofs where it's at, man.
I dig it.
You're going to feel like it should be the open air. It's Wimbledon.
But yeah, congrats to Harmony Tan. Unfortunate for Serena.
What's her name?
Harmony Tan.
Huh.
You and me.
What's happening right now?
That was just the song.
Marcus singing?
Yeah, I just had the tune stuck in my head after saying Harmony.
What tune? Just any tune with Harmony?
Together in perfect harmony.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a Paul McCartney and...
Stevie Wonder.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, you are.
Yes, you are. Guaranteed. Ebony and Ivory.
Ebony and Ivory.
How do you not know Ebony and Ivory?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just had, when I think of the word harmony, that song always pops into my head. So I just.
Okay. Duly noted.
I believe in harmony. That's all I'm saying.
Wait a minute. Duly.
What an idiot.
Stay with us. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming. Oh, my God. The show's almost over. How time flies when you're having fun talking sports with your buddies. 865-546-8200. Your number. Speak now, forever hold your peace. 546-8200. Back to wrap things up after this. All right, wrapping up on a Tuesday afternoon edition of the show. Russell LeBaire with you. Marcus hanging out as well, getting ready for overtime coming up next on many of these fine fan-run affiliates. Our friend Barrett Salee over at CBS Sports has released the SEC strength of schedule rankings from hardest to easiest. Bad news for Auburn coach Brian Harsin, who's already on the hot seat. According to Barrett, Auburn has the hardest schedule in the SEC. Now, this is subject to change, obviously. I mean, there's always teams that we think are good that aren't good and vice
versa.
Poor
Brian Harsin.
He's got Penn State as their scary kind of out-of-conference team. That was a barn burner last year.
Yeah, but they got him at Jordan-Hare, right?
They do.
It's a tough place to come play.
Open up with Mercer, San Jose State, then Penn State. They got Missouri, LSU at home, at Georgia, at Ole Miss, Arkansas at home, at Mississippi State, Texas A&M home, Western Kentucky, at Alabama. Doesn't seem that hard.
No.
Penn State. They got Vanderbilt as the second hardest. Vandy, Commodores have Georgia on the road. They draw Alabama as their rotating SEC opponent in Tuscaloosa. Oh, my God. Do we really need to see that?
No.
See Vanderbilt play at Alabama this year?
Well, just save everybody some money.
They play Wake. They open up with Hawaii in week zero. They play defending MAC champion Northern Illinois on the road. Why are they going to Northern Illinois? Like, Vandy, do we? I know you're different and it's difficult, but you're making this harder on yourself than it needs to be. Like, schedule at least.
They're like the exact opposite. Like, Florida won't even play outside of the state of Florida, much less in a different time zone.
Arkansas has the third hardest schedule. They open up with Cincinnati. We talked about earlier. They also go to BYU. That's tough, man. That's tough. They're not messing around with that schedule. Tennessee has the fourth hardest schedule. Of course, we all know our schedule. I mean, Pitt, very winnable game on the road. The rest of it is... should be no problem. Non-conference wise, anyway. Conference schedule obviously going to be a big problem. Mississippi State, LSU, Florida, A&M, Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia, Kentucky has the 12th hardest schedule. Missouri has the 13th, and Ole Miss, according to Barrett Salee, has the easiest schedule in the conference this year.
Who do they play from the East?
Their permanent cross-division rivalry is without Vanderbilt, which always helps. And then...
How did Ole Miss end up with Vanderbilt?
I mean, it's... Somebody's from the West has got to play them. Who else has a better claim? This is what I've been talking about all offseason. as far as, like, if you're Tennessee and you're just wanting what's best for Tennessee from a win-loss perspective and your ability to rebuild your football program, what you want is the 8-game conference schedule with one permanent opponent, because you're the school that can lay claim to a real actual rivalry with Vanderbilt. You would get that. So you would have, and it's never going to be an easy SEC schedule because you got to play seven other opponents, but like that's
your one is Vanderbilt.
If you're advocating for Tennessee, that's what you want. That's, and I'm not necessarily saying that's what I want. I don't know. Maybe that's not good for the game, not good for the conference and all that stuff. But if you're Tennessee and you're just, hey, what's best for UT? It's 8-game conference schedule with one permanent opponent, and that permanent opponent is Vandy. That's what Ole Miss has been benefiting from. They play Vandy every single year, and they beat them pretty much every year. Here's their schedule. They open up with Troy. Talking about Ole Miss. Troy at home, Central Arkansas at home, at Georgia Tech, at home against Tulsa, at home against Kentucky. This is their schedule.
Yeah.
Troy, Central Arkansas, Georgia Tech, Tulsa, Kentucky, at Vandy. That's the first six games. There's no reason they shouldn't be 6-0.
No, none at all.
And everybody's going to be talking about how great they are. And they haven't played anybody. They ain't played anybody, Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they play Auburn at home, which they should win, at LSU, at Texas A&M, at home against Bama, at Arkansas, Mississippi State. How funny would it be if they went on like a 5-game losing streak right after that?
It'll be hilarious. Lose the Egg Bowl, finish the season 7-5.
I mean, really.
They could finish 6-6. I mean, that Kentucky game.
Well, their losses should be Alabama at home, at A&M. And those are the only two guaranteed losses on their schedule. Now, at LSU will be hard. At Arkansas will be hard. Auburn and Mississippi State at home, they should win, but no cakewalk. Man, they do have an easy schedule.
Yeah, really easy.
Their big non-conference game is at Georgia Tech. Team that's probably going to be firing their coach.
So what do they did they still run the triple option, or did they finally get away from that? They fired years.
They are Jeff Collins, who was, I'm not throwing our guy under the bus, but Josh Pate,
yeah,
loved him some Jeff Collins. He's been telling us for the past 2 or 3 years how good he's going to do.
Dude, you live in a glass house. Oh, Chad Morris.
I said I'm not throwing rocks. Listen, hey, I got much more dumber takes than Josh Pate. I do this 15 hours a week. For the past 12 years. Yeah. I've had some doozies.
Should we bring
who the hell is Tony Vitello?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Oh, you beat me to it.
Pate's new guy is Aranda. That's the guy he's
He's got me
he's
sold.
Pumping now.
Pate's got me sold on Dave Aranda. That Baylor team was pretty good since he's been down there.
I think our schedule – you know, we just get killed because of the Alabama thing. I mean, that's
– every year.
Out-of-conference schedule is pretty soft.
I hate our out-of-conference schedule.
Pitt, Ball State, Akron,
boring.
UT Martin, is that – or Tennessee? Tennessee Tech was last year. We play UT Martin this year. Who cares?
I mean, Pitt's been kind of fun, but the other three, it's nothing new. I can remember playing like UTEP in the 90s, late 80s and 90s, teams like that. UTEP would come in here and we'd beat them like 55-7. Absolutely just bludgeoning.
Who we were supposed to go to BYU next year. Did we replace that?
With Virginia and Nashville.
That's right.
The Cavs. Cavaliers. Which apparently BYU hasn't found somebody to take our place yet. Why did we buy out of that game? I know we've talked about it.
Probably just didn't want to go all the way out there to BYU to maybe get beat by a bunch of Mormons. I don't know.
You can throw the whole Mormon thing into it.
You think about it, too, every time you think about BYU. It's weird. I'm going to say that. It's weird. next year's non-conference schedule, Virginia in Nashville, Austin Peay, UT San Antonio. The Roadrunners are coming to Neyland. And I guess we have one more game to be decided. Oh, no, UConn. Huskies are coming to town next year.
Our man Aaron Torres.
That should be a beatdown, right?
Oh, epic proportions.
If we're losing to UConn at home in year three of Heupel,
shut it down.
We've got issues.
They were fighting it out with Vanderbilt last year for the worst team in the nation. They're horrible.
Who's their new coach?
I have no idea. Doesn't matter. They could dig up Vince Lombardi out of the ground, bring him back to life, clone his ass like Marcus was talking about, and they'd still suck.
It'll be year two for their new guy, whoever it is.
Look it up in your fancy book there.
You got to take people behind the fourth wall here, man.
Pulling a Trey Wallace.
Can just make believe that I know UConn's head coach off the top of my head. Make me look like an expert. Isn't that the job here? Make me look good?
I used to until you started taking gratuitous cheap shots. I expect, your everyday average amount of cheap shots, but you've gotten a little above and beyond lately.
Are you wanting the name of the head coach for UConn? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, Marcus.
It's Jim Mora.
Oh, that's right.
Ooh.
Jim Mora.
Like, you knew that off the top of your head?
Year two.
Marcus?
Yeah, I just came up with that off the top of my head. Not
Google in your computer right in front of
him? Of course not. Never. He knew that. UConn, National Forecast of Athlon has them 129. Their projected record of 2-10. An opposing assistant coach anonymously says of UConn, the hire was really confusing, but give Mora credit for making some smart personnel moves. Most of the coaches have good contacts in the Northeast. A shrewd coaching staff has been put together by Jim Mora.
Oh, yeah.
Playoffs? That was his dad.
Yeah.
He wasn't a bad coach.
No.
He was at UCLA, right?
Wasn't
particularly
good coach, but he was a bad coach.
Yeah.
No,
we're talking about senior right now.
No, we're going back and forth. He's talking about junior. You're talking about senior. I'm talking about both.
Wow.
Just dancing in between. I hope we never hire another famous coach's son.
We never have to.
We did that back to back. Never hire the offspring, man. Never works out.
I mean, that's what doomed us. Hiring Dooley doomed us. They should have gone to interim. It is summertime. Now we're going to start on the kippy.
I mean, if he had stayed, there would have been a lot of issues off the
field. Oh, we would have been put on probation, man.
Because he was never mind.
Yeah. No, we were put on probation. We were going to put on probation. We were on probation for 3 years.
Keeps on giving. It was longer than that, man. The last of it was when I joined the show back in 16. Willie Mack Garza. You mean, because I remember being on the show and we were just like, I can't believe this is still, we're still having to deal with Lane Kiffin.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't there was obviously no bowl ban. I don't even think there were scholarship sanctions or anything like it. It was like you lost a couple of recruiting days and official visits and stuff. I mean, it was relatively minor stuff, but you were on probation. And the fact that he left when he did probably helped. If he had stayed longer, Ogeron was a loose cannon his 9 months here. Like, you were going to get.
Yeah, we're going to get in big trouble.
It was going to be bad. Yeah, I think they had 3 years probation, number of official visits were reduced, in-person evaluation days for coaches. I mean, it was
the Bruce Pearl investigation sprung out of them being on campus when. Isn't that what the Legion says? Legion like to blame Kiffin.
I think that's an urban legend. I don't think. I think the Bruce Pearl thing sprung out of Bruce Pearl being Bruce Pearl, but that, as they say, is another story for another day. Now that's going to do it for us. Thank you, Barrett. Thank you, Marcus. Overtime coming up next on many of these fine Fan Run affiliates. We'll be back tomorrow right here on Fan Run Radio. Oh, yeah.